There is simply no means to carry enough fuel to propel a spacecraft to a distant location. And when the law of gravity is understood, neither would there be a reason to carry that much fuel. In much the same way, by understanding the higher laws which control all movements and realities of this world, the deists possess the knowledge to not only overcome the limitations of these laws, but to utilize the force of the laws to bring about their own enlightenment. In the same way that gravity limits man's ability to escape the surface of the earth, once the higher laws of creation are understood, the laws themselves can be utilized to empower the person with esoteric knowledge how to escape the limitations of earth consciousness. From a deist perspective, the First Amendment is a prohibition against either church or state from interfering with this spiritual process and foundation that enables man to experience and know self and ultimately know God. In the same way that the law of gravity affects every movement and what man experiences upon the face of the earth, what the deists portrayed as the laws of nature and nature's God intimately orchestrates all of man's successes and failures. If you jump up to escape the earth's gravity, as your body becomes airborne, it will initially appear that you have achieved success. That is until your momentum is arrested by the force of gravity working upon you, and you find your efforts negated. What is true of gravity is also true of all the laws, but in order to bring about the necessary learning experiences through which mankind evolves, the results of man's efforts in conjunction with the laws are not as immediate as with the case of gravity. Once understood, mostly all of man's efforts are initially supported by the laws, much like the initial success of jumping up and using one's natural strength to have both of one's feet off the ground. And while the force of gravity will very quickly cause us to become subject to the laws and lose upward momentum before we fall back to the earth, other laws are designed to respond back to us in a more gradual cycle. And this is necessary in order for our efforts to evolve and the opportunity for the initial movement to be built upon and compounded in order to bring about our greater learning experience. All movements of man not only initiate the laws but are subject to the trials of the laws as the movement or endeavor which man initially invokes evolves through the steps that are at first supported by the laws and then subject to the sustaining tests which are brought into being when the laws were initially invoked.
The laws,
therefore, are imbued with a natural resistance to man's movements and endeavors in order to test the validity of his movements. If an embryo were to be thrust out of its mother's womb 1 month after conception, then the embryo would very quickly perish because it could not sustain life apart from its mother during that early stage of development. When the fetus has developed to the degree where it can sustain life outside the mother's womb, it is at that point that natural labor and the process of birth is begun. In much the same way, this world is very much the womb of Mother Earth, and Tihi laws are designed to develop the person fetus and test for wholeness and completion. Therefore, if a movement, effort, or endeavor of man lacks wholeness, the laws are designed to turn man's efforts back upon themselves, in the form of a cosmic biofeedback machine that enables man to learn from his mistakes and misplaced efforts. And it is this living biofeedback essence of the laws that ensures the failure of half-hearted or incomplete efforts. Wise men who were often enlightened to the all-encompassing structure of mathematics, that is, Pythagoras, Gurdjieff, and others foresaw the atomic reality that is only now unfolding in the discoveries of quantum physics. Wise men who understood the esoteric reality of the laws have long pointed to the example of the law of octaves, which systematically permits the building up of an initial effort and then tests it to either divert it back upon itself or permit it to move on to the next sequence. See the law of octaves. The law of octaves, in brief, what mystics such as Pythagoras, Socrates, and Plato, Valentinus, the original disciples of Jesus, and in more modern times G.I. Gurdjieff knew, what others do not, is that for every action there is not only a reaction, but there are testing points built into the laws of creation that must be satisfied in order to move beyond the barrier that these laws present. In the parable of the call to the wedding feast, when Jesus portrayed those who had failed to put on the required wedding garment as being cast into the sorrows of the outer darkness of mind and being, see outer darkness, the reality portrayed was that of being bound to the very limited organic consciousness of the body vessel, that is, bound by the law and limited by human carnal reasoning and logic. And when properly understood, The analogy of Plato's cave, see Plato, portrays the plight of natural organic man as being held in a state of mental and spiritual limitation by the illusions of this world, see above the illusions of the forms of matter. When the deist framers of our constitutional form of government took the position that if you begin to understand what you see, and when the laws that manifest all of creation are properly understood, that you will yourself begin on the journey towards an enlightened state of mind that is an America Gnostic. This same reality is presented in the Gospel of Thomas where it states, 5. Jesus said, "Recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you." To recognize what is in your sight, you must be cognizant of the laws that have formed the images of what you observe in the world, images that are formed by impressing an aspect of mind into an allegorical symbol that is seen by man's organic senses. Thus, what man observes in the world about him is only a symbol that is holographically interpreted by man's physical senses, and only when you begin to understand what you see, can you begin to escape the outer darkness. Plato's cave. With respect to the underlying laws of creation, Gurdjieff used what is commonly known as the Enneagram, which is said to be a merger of the Law of Three, which I have portrayed as the divine pattern that permeates all of creation, and the Law of Seven, which is portrayed as the Law of Octaves. The Enneagram consists of 9 points, which is the Law of Seven with the 2 shock points added at the crucial interval points where the laws test all movements. The following is a quote from Uspensky's In Search of the Miraculous. Speaking in general, it must be understood that the Enneagram is a universal symbol. All knowledge can be included in the Enneagram, and with the help of the Enneagram it can be interpreted. And in this connection, only what a man is able to put into the Enneagram does he actually know, that is, understand. What he cannot put into the Enneagram he does not understand. For the man who is able to make use of it, the Enneagram makes books and libraries entirely unnecessary. Everything can be included and read in the Enneagram. A man may be quite alone in the desert, and he can trace the Enneagram in the sand and in it read the eternal laws of the universe. And every time he can learn something new, something he did not know before. Take particular note of the words. For the man who is able to make use of it, the Enneagram makes books and libraries entirely unnecessary. And it is this knowledge of the laws that the original core disciples of Jesus and the way understood that made them warn others that there is only one teacher, which they portrayed as the true prophet. And this is demonstrated in the words of the Apostle Peter, who is quoted in the homilies of his disciple Clement. Hence, O beloved Clement, if you would know the things pertaining to God, you have to learn them from him alone, because he alone knows the truth. For if anyone else knows anything, he has received it from him or from his disciples. The deists and the law of octaves. When the deists expressed the words, the laws of nature and nature's God, they understood the law of three as manifest in the divine pattern of creation, as well as the law of octaves, which holographically is embedded throughout every aspect of all that exists. When deism is portrayed as deism, is the standpoint that reason and observation of the natural world, without the need for organized religion, can determine that a supreme being created the universe, see deism. It was because the American Gnostics, who were deists, understood the higher reality of the laws when overcome, is a harnessing of the laws within one's own mind and being that, in the above words of Uspensky, makes books and libraries entirely unnecessary. Why would overcoming the laws within one's self render books and libraries entirely unnecessary? Those who overcome the laws and emerge out of what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being or the illusions of Plato's cave are able to see and understand all things for what they truly are and are thus, travailing the path of the soul's journey of enlightenment. And one of the primary concerns of our deist constitutional framers was creating an environment where the natural laws of God could function at a higher level and permit the people to evolve to their higher potential that organic man simply could not even begin to comprehend. Though the pattern of the law of three and the law of octaves is holographically present throughout all of creation, it is perhaps easiest to see, hear, and observe in music. Again, let me stress the fact that while the manifest laws at work can be demonstrated more easily in music, its far-reaching reality is prevalent throughout all aspects of life in this world and beyond. The only difference, then, is that the same sequence of law is more difficult to observe throughout the other aspects of life, but quickly becomes apparent once one is cognizant of the pattern and sequence. The same pattern that is found in music has been noted in what is known as Newland's Law of Octaves, that is related to the arrangement of elements in the periodic table. If elements are arranged in the order of their atomic weights, the eighth element starting from a given one is a kind of repetition of the first. It is said that once Pythagoras recognized the relationship of music and math and established music as an exact science, Pythagoras then applied his law of harmonic intervals to all the phenomena of nature. He went so far as to demonstrate the harmonic relationship of the planets, constellations, and elements to each other. If we look at the picture of a typical keyboard, what we see is the whole notes represented in the white keys, and the half tones in the black keys. Regardless of the fact of whether we understand music or not, what we should quickly recognize is the easily discernible fact that not every whole note interval has a half tone. Why? Why isn't there a half tone between the third and fourth note on the keyboard and musical scale? Also, why isn't there a half tone between the seventh and eighth note of a musical scale? Though the answer is very simple, the reality that is portrayed is so esoteric and beyond physical reality as we know it, that the most accomplished musicians cannot supply you with the answer to the enigma, an enigma that is holographically true of all laws and envelops every aspect of our lives and creation. Man's physical body is programmed for his spiritual failure. Our physical body is of the earth, it therefore is not a vehicle that is the natural environment of man's higher soul and spiritual natures. What this means is that if we are to manifest our higher natures and rise above the inherent carnal limitations of our physical body / vessel, we will be required to make a conscious effort, even a superconscious effort, as we endeavor to overcome the laws that are the ruling forces of this natural world. Once again, our physical body is comprised of earth matter and is not naturally acclimated to support man's higher aspects of mind and being. And this is the reason why Paul warns that the natural mind of man cannot even begin to perceive or comprehend the higher reality of the soul and spiritual natures. See Mystery of the Gospel. Judging and rejecting these higher truths as utter foolishness, and even heresy. That the physical body and mind must be purifying and transformed in order to gain access to those higher areas of mind that are able to perceive and comprehend man's higher soul and spiritual reality, and the fact that this transformational process requires much effort and work on oneself is portrayed in the words of the disciples where they stated, "We must through many tribulations enter the kingdom of God." Acts 14:22 NKJ. If we are therefore bound to this physical realm by the natural laws, then it is of the utmost importance for us to be cognizant of the effects of the law as they interact with every aspect of nature and life. If we pose the question, is man's physical body imbued with the laws that inhibit him from fulfilling his spiritual goals? As we look around us at the natural world, it is important that we be cognizant of the fact that we see the absence of straight lines. The leaves on a tree or plant, the outline of a mountain range, the formation of rocks, as well as the very physical bodies in which we presently dwell. Straight lines do not exist in nature. Why? Because these laws which we can hear and observe on a keyboard cause all things to change direction in midstream. In the same way that we cannot clear our minds and focus on a single thought, as we attempt to walk the path of spiritual enlightenment, the laws of this realm will constantly work to lead us off the path to life. Returning once again to the keyboard, starting from the leftmost key, we can see the first note, and between the first and second white keys is a half tone which is represented by that black key. Thus, the black key represents a half step or half tone between the two white keys, which musicians call a sharp or flat. The same is true with respect to the sequence of the second to third note. Then, between the third and fourth note, the pattern suddenly changes, and we can observe that there is no half tone between these notes. Why? Because when we play the notes, the frequency of the fourth note is actually a half tone, and yet it artificially and falsely sounds to our physical hearing a whole step increment. Why? Why does our ears hear a half tone in the third to fourth sequence as if it is a whole, while this is not true in the first two intervals of an octave? The enigma is caused by a twisting of the frequencies when they are played in sequence, but this twisting is not only true of the musical scale, but is holographically true and representative of a pattern which is indigenous to all such sequences of law throughout all of creation. What this means is that while we can hear this law at work in music, and observe this law at work by virtue of the physical placement of the keys on a keyboard, this same pattern remains universal to all the laws that control this world throughout every aspect of our lives. The result is that when we think we are hearing what would be portrayed as a straight linear path, our physical senses are subject to an illusion within the construct of the laws, resulting in the fact that we are inadvertently turned off the linear path without ever realizing that our direction has been altered by the natural sequence of laws which immerse every aspect of this physical realm in what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being, or the illusions of Plato's cave. In the first place, we must understand that an octave is comprised of seven notes or sequences, as is the pattern of the seven colors of the rainbow that make up white light. As the seventh note is stepped into the eighth sequence, the first note of the sequence is double the frequency of the first, and is repeated as one octave higher than the initial note played. What this means is that there is seven notes which complete the sequence before the first note is repeated one octave higher than the first, as in the common musical sequence do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, with the second do being the same note as the first, but only one octave higher. For those who don't understand the musical scale, there is no variableness in the beginning and ending of the first sequence that makes up the octave, because the frequency of the eighth note, which is also expressed in the term do which commences the next higher octave, is double the frequency of the first do. And this is why whole notes only consist of a repetitive A through G sequence. Limits of the organic mind, linear thought, and fragmentation. While from a human perspective it could be asserted that there is an inherent congenital defect in the hearing of man that causes him to falsely hear the interval between the third and fourth sequences of an octave as if it were a whole step, regardless of the fact that it is a half step in the frequencies of the musical sequence in failing to understand the reality and higher purpose of this long-ignored phenomena, it is as if mankind continues to dwell in a self-imposed dark ages that has gravely inhibited his progress. In fact, all the poverty, all of man's sufferings, violence, conflict, and bestiality that men inflict upon other men is all the result of man's self-imposed ignorance of the knowledge of the laws. On the other hand, mystics and those who have long understood the movement of the laws of creation have known that this interval between the third to fourth sequence is in fact a testing point of the laws, a test for completeness and wholeness, to see if we are prepared to move beyond that point in the physical and mental limitations of the body vessel. But it has been virtually impossible for natural organic man to make any real progress beyond the level where he is presently at, because pseudo-intellectuals reject the wisdom that has been presented to them. The biblical authors all warn that man's higher soul and spiritual reality is set forth in what was portrayed as the mysteries of the kingdom of God, was beyond the comprehension of organic man in his natural, earthly carnal mindset, see mystery of the gospel. And yet, both man's religious and political leaders have long ignored their witness. In the same way that man is deaf and oblivious to the fact that the third to fourth and seventh to eighth sequence of the musical scale that he hears in not a linear progression as he imagines, he in like manner remains oblivious to the fact that both his line of vision and his rational linear thought that he relies upon to evaluate his experiences in this world is subject to the same testing and twisting that is easily demonstrated in his hearing. What this means is that organic man's rational thinking is totally unreliable to evaluate what he sees and evaluates, because what appears to be linear is an illusion that he is not at all even aware of. In the same way that the listener is not aware of the frequency shifts when the notes of an octave is played back to him, and what sounds to his physical ears to be a linear incremental progression is not at all true, the same is true with respect to both his vision and what he would consider rational thought and reasoning. The result is man's inherent blindness and suppressed rationale that inhibits his ability to properly evaluate what he thinks he sees and understands. Why? Very simply, because of the carnal blindness inflicted upon man by virtue of the organic limitations of the body vessel. And when these natural organic limitations are understood, The reality which confronts man is seen in his inability to grasp only a mere fragment of what he sees and comprehends. And perhaps the perfect example of the problem is presented in a poem by John Godfrey Saxe, which is based upon a fable told in India. It is a good warning about how our inhibited sensory perceptions and limited organic logic can lead to some serious misinterpretations, especially when the investigations of the component parts of a whole and their relations in making up the whole are inadequate and lack coordination. It was six men of Indostan, to learning much inclined, who went to see the elephant, though all of them were blind, that each by observation might satisfy his mind. Deists are said to revere what is called natural religion versus revealed religion. But what is natural religion? Which further raises the question, do modern neo-deists even understand the proper application of the scriptures and what is the true meaning of what they term a revealed religion? What the original deists said is that if you begin to understand what they portrayed was the laws of nature, that the higher reality of nature's God will begin to be revealed to you. And, when rightly understood, this is the exact message of Paul who wrote, because that which is known about God, for God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse, Rom 1:19-20 NAS. And if we ask why and how can God be understood through the attributes of creation and the laws of nature? Because there is a divine pattern that all of creation is holographically imprinted with the spiritual DNA of its creator. And if you understand the pattern that the laws of God imbued into all that exists, you will then begin to perceive and comprehend the source that brought forth the ALL that exists. Where the priest who promotes priestcraft corrupts the original teachings, and then seduces the believers into accepting his authority by promoting blind belief and faith in the dogma of carnal men, a true Gnostic who builds upon the proper mindset and lifestyle is able to develop his innate, God-given, abilities to gain access to the source of all truth and knowledge. Thus, if as Jesus taught that the kingdom is within us, why not make the journey in the way and learn directly from the source? And having themselves tapped into the source, the deists, or American Gnostics, influenced the framers of our constitutional form of government to create an environment that would enable man to aspire to a higher potential. I am writing the following on the objectives and accomplishments of the American deists/Gnostics, because it is impossible to evolve the mind beyond the organic physical, carnal, level of nature man, without first understanding, 1, both the laws, 2, and the manner in which the laws evolve the mind of man to overcome the natural physical barrier of earth consciousness. 3, with the objective being to enable the seeker/disciple to begin to tap into man's higher soul and spiritual reality that his physical senses are oblivious to. Deism and the First Amendment. While the deists were responsible for laying the constitutional foundation that Americans today have inherited, these same Americans neither understand the deists, nor do they understand the full potential that the Constitution has the inherent power to bring about in the lives of mankind. And from both a secular and religious perspective, this ignorance with respect to the deists is the most dangerous force in the world today. Why? Because many of the core deists not only possessed a comprehension of the laws which control all aspects of the life that all people live, but just as important is the fact that some of the deists possessed the body of esoteric knowledge that the church threw away when it entered into a covenant relationship with pagan Rome. An abiding reality is that all of creation and life is built upon a foundation of immutable laws, and success is often the result of man's endeavor to build upon this foundation of laws a structure which ensures his success. While the law of gravity is an example of an immutable law which not only holds man to the surface of the earth, but also is part of the equation that holds the earth in a rotation around the sun by understanding the law of gravity, man can devise various means to escape its limitations. Moreover, in the case of space travel, man can harness the very force of gravity as a means of propulsion. When man made the journey to the moon, he used the rocket's propulsion to break free of the Earth's gravity, and then the moon's gravity to draw him in that direction. There is simply no means to carry enough fuel to propel a spacecraft to a distant location, and when the law of gravity is understood, neither would there be a reason to carry that much fuel. In much the same way, by understanding the higher laws which control all movements and realities of this world, the deists possessed the knowledge to not only overcome the limitations of these laws, but to utilize the force of the laws to bring about their own enlightenment. In the same way that gravity limits man's ability to escape the surface of the earth, once the higher laws of creation are understood, the laws themselves can be utilized to empower the person with esoteric knowledge how to escape the limitations of earth consciousness. From a deist perspective, the First Amendment is a prohibition against either church or state from interfering with this spiritual process and foundation that enables man to experience and know self and ultimately know God. In the same way that the law of gravity affects every movement and what man experiences upon the face of the earth, what the deists portrayed as the laws of nature and nature's God intimately orchestrates all of man's successes and failures. If you jump up to escape the earth's gravity, as your body becomes airborne, it will initially appear that you have achieved success. That is, until your momentum is arrested by the force of gravity working upon you, and you find your efforts negated. What is true of gravity is also true of all the laws, but in order to bring about the necessary learning experiences through which mankind evolves, the results of man's efforts in conjunction with the laws are not as immediate as with the case of gravity. Once understood, mostly all of man's efforts are initially supported by the laws, much like the initial success of jumping up and using one's natural strength to have both of one's feet off the ground. And while the force of gravity will very quickly cause us to become subject to the laws and lose upward momentum before we fall back to the earth, other laws are designed to respond back to us in a more gradual cycle. And this is necessary in order for our efforts to evolve and the opportunity for the initial movement to be built upon and compounded, in order to bring about our greater learning experience. All movements of man not only initiate the laws, but are subject to the trials of the laws as the movement or endeavor which man initially invokes evolves through the steps that are at first supported by the laws, and then subject to the sustaining tests which are brought into being when the laws were initially invoked. The laws, therefore, are imbued with a natural resistance to man's movements and endeavors in order to test the validity of his movements. If an embryo were to be thrust out of its mother's womb 1 month after conception, then the embryo would very quickly perish because it could not sustain life apart from its mother during that early stage of development. When the fetus has developed to the degree where it can sustain life outside the mother's womb, it is at that point that natural labor and the process of birth has begun. In much the same way, this world is very much the womb of Mother Earth, and Tihi laws are designed to develop the person fetus and test for wholeness and completion. Therefore, if a movement, effort, or endeavor of man lacks wholeness, the laws are designed to turn man's efforts back upon themselves in the form of a cosmic biofeedback machine that enables man to learn from his mistakes and misplaced efforts. And it is this living biofeedback essence of the laws that ensures the failure of half-hearted or incomplete efforts. Wise men who were often enlightened to the all-encompassing structure of mathematics, that is, Pythagoras, Gurdjieff, and others foresaw the atomic reality that is only now unfolding in the discoveries of quantum physics. Wise men who understood the esoteric reality of the laws have long pointed to the example of the law of octaves, which systematically permits the building up of an initial effort and then tests it to either divert it back upon itself or permit it to move on to the next sequence. See the law of octaves. The law of octaves, in brief, what mystics such as Pythagoras, Socrates, and Plato, Valentinus, the original disciples of Jesus, and in more modern times G.I. Gurdjieff knew, what others do not, is that for every action there is not only a reaction, but there are testing points built into the laws of creation that must be satisfied in order to move beyond the barrier that these laws present. In the parable of the call to the wedding feast, when Jesus portrayed those who had failed to put on the required wedding garment as being cast into the sorrows of the outer darkness of mind and being, see outer darkness, the reality portrayed was that of being bound to the very limited organic consciousness of the body vessel that is, bound by the law and limited by human carnal reasoning and logic. And when properly understood, the analogy of Plato's cave, see Plato, portrays the plight of natural organic man as being held in a state of mental and spiritual limitation by the illusions of this world. See above the illusions of the forms of matter. When the deist framers of our constitutional form of government took the position that if you begin to understand what you see, and when the laws that manifest all of creation are properly understood, that you will yourself begin on the journey towards an enlightened state of mind that is an American Gnostic. This same reality is presented in the Gospel of Thomas where it states, 5. Jesus said, "Recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you." To recognize what is in your sight, you must be cognizant of the laws that have formed the images of what you observe in the world, images that are formed by impressing an aspect of mind into an allegorical symbol that is seen by man's organic senses. Thus, what man observes in the world about him is only a symbol that is holographically interpreted by man's physical senses, and only when you begin to understand what you see, can you begin to escape the outer darkness. Plato's Cave. With respect to the underlying laws of creation, Gurdjieff used what is commonly known as the anagram, which is said to be a merger of the law of three, which I have portrayed as the divine pattern that permeates all of creation, and the law of seven, which is portrayed as the law of octaves. The anagram consists of 9 points, which is the law of seven with the 2 shock points added at the crucial interval points where the laws test all movements. The following is a quote from Uspensky's In Search of the Miraculous. Speaking in general, it must be understood that the anagram is a universal symbol. All knowledge can be included in the anagram, and with the help of the anagram it can be interpreted. And in this connection, only what a man is able to put into the anagram does he actually know. That is, understand. What he cannot put into the anagram, he does not understand. For the man who is able to make use of it, the anagram makes books and libraries entirely unnecessary. Everything can be included and read in the anagram. A man may be quite alone in the desert, and he can trace the anagram in the sand and in it read the eternal laws of the universe. And every time he can learn something new, something he did not know before. Take particular note of the words. For the man who is able to make use of it, the anagram makes books and libraries entirely unnecessary. And it is this knowledge of the laws that the original core disciples of Jesus and the way understood that made them warn others that there is only one teacher which they portrayed as the true prophet. And this is demonstrated in the words of the Apostle Peter, who is quoted in the homilies of his disciple Clement. Hence, O beloved Clement, if you would know the things pertaining to God, you have to learn them from him alone, because he alone knows the truth. For if anyone else knows anything, he has received it from him or from his disciples,